This is Mae Brussel. It's broadcast number 670, October the 8th, 1984. Now that I've gone through that essay with you, that article on the link of Jerry Falwell to Ronald Reagan and the fundamentalist belief of both of those men, because it is really hard to believe that they think similarly, but there is a lot of information or evidence that they do. And this talk about the rapture, the pre-tribulation and tribulation millennium. If you turn your Christian radio stations on, which I've been doing lately to pick up the lingo, it's on all the time, and references to Helen Marie Taylor distributing Bibles for his literature for the schools, wanting to get Bibles for the schools. And if you listen to those broadcasts, you begin to hear their thinking, and you realize that these stations are growing, and they're on 24 hours, and they mean what they're saying, and they have a lot of audience that call in and follow them in a very conscientious way. So now we'll go on to many articles I have, again, as much as time allows, on the Christian front. But first, I just want to remind you of last year's broadcast to update the news of this year and how quickly the year goes to melt into what we were sharing last year. That was broadcast number 618, October the 10th, 1983. Cardinal Cook had just passed away, and the new cardinal who replaced him is Mr. O'Connor, the very conservative archbishop who is putting down Gerald Reed Ferraro and taking the Catholic votes away from Mondale and Ferraro by bringing the Catholic religion into this, which they didn't do when John Kennedy was running as president. They didn't bring that up at all, but now they are pushing for Reagan's election. He's very close to the Vatican, has an envoy at the Vatican, and they are continuously making this one of the decisions to turn the middle class, the Irish Catholic, the Boston Catholic, the New York, usually part of the Democratic Party, away from the Democrats to vote for Ronald Reagan. Cardinal Cook passed away last year. One of his attending his funeral was Senator Alphonse D'Amato. He's very close to Jerry Falwell, and it was close to Larry McDonald, and he was selling buttons for a nonprofit foundation, the Soviet Massacre Assistance Fund, out of Washington, D.C. I was talking about Tom Pappas, the Greek member of the military elite from Greece with strong links to our CIA and to Spiro Agnew, which I published 10 years earlier, and it was just coming out. The exposés of the links were just coming out in the establishment media last year. Also, there was an article about John Belushi, the major drug scandal in Los Angeles that would result if there was a trial of Kathy Smith, and described it would be one of the messiest stories of the decades. But the Panko story wasn't, and the John DeLorean story wasn't. And you see right now how adept they are at covering up stories that link to the very, very highest echelons of government. There was an article last week that Kathy Smith will probably be sent back to Los Angeles for trial. And then it mentions the allegations that she was an informer for the Los Angeles Police Department. Last year, I talked about an article, "The Military Prepares for the Day When Men in Space Control the Entire World." And that goes back to High Frontier, Daniel Graham, and the people working, again, close to Jerry Falwell and around Jerry Falwell, accepting the space war, the limited nuclear war, the elevation of people into space colonies, and also linking the military to the religious group, strong connections of Daniel Graham and his friends and the high-up military to Jerry Falwell. Also, last year, the used tool company merged on particular units with the W.R. Grace Company, and I believe that use has been the umbrella for the Nazification of America was, and that Mr. J. Peter Grace, as much as any single person, with Otto Ambrose and Mr. Milliken on the board of the Grace Company that also set up Western Goals and their computers with the police, and a high-up official in charge of the Knights of Malta in this country. One is an organization run allegedly by the Mormon Mafia, or was, at least when they took control over Howard. The other is the Catholic Church, working very well together, merging in business and working with their beliefs in the Vatican and in Jesus Christ and in the Armageddon and all the traditional beliefs that the fundamentalists do also. They don't believe in the identical structure, but they work together on a political basis, and that's one of the important things. Then there also was an article and a pamphlet handed out last year called The Declaration of Support for the Nicaraguan Freedom Fighters. Those are members of Anastasia Somoza's army that were like the SAVAK in Iran or the DINA in Chile, the special elite police force that do the kind of torturing I shared with you last week. And members of this group who signed the Declaration of Support was Robert Morris, chairman of the National Committee to Restore International Internal Security. He was working with our committees in Washington for the internal security and also set up the Young Americans for Freedom, who came to his home from Munich, Germany, and works with Gerard O'Neill in Princeton, the home of the space stations, the designing the livable part of them. Also on this Declaration of Support for Nicaraguan Freedom Fighters is Lieutenant Daniel O'Graham and Jerry Falwell of the Moral Majority and the John Birch Society, Lieutenant General C.M. Talbot, Chief of Staff of the Military Order of World Wars, who is also on that Coalition for Peace Through Strength with Falwell. And the same names you see are running through the Freedom Fighters, the Somoza Army, the Peace Through Strength, the Star Wars, the Biblical Prophecies, all working together and certainly pushing for Ronald Reagan's election so that they can be in business and get what they want out of the Congress and out of the candidates from now on. They'll be very much in control. Now, there was an article about Billy Graham when he went to the Soviet Union a couple of weeks ago in the L.A. Herald. It was by Rabbi Abraham Cooper from the Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles, and he was the title is called The Soviet Worshippers That Billy Graham Won't See, and he's telling about the Jews that haven't published Bibles in Russia since 1917, since the revolution, and he is addressing himself to a Soviet Union that is so horrible, and he refers to the Afghanistan incident and the Korean airline tragedy dealing with these people who are so low, and he refers to the new Cold War and Andrei Sakharov, who's languishing there in some prison. Now, this line, the Afghanistan invasion, the Korean airline, and the Sakharov are the only three issues that the far-right fundamentalists, now this isn't only the Christians, the Jews, keep hammering at. And yet this rabbi from the Wiesenthal Center is a part of a team who go along, not for whatever reason, I don't know, to say that Martin Bormann is dead, when everyone knows they're alive. I got documents from the archives that would have gone to them, except that they don't want them because they don't want to know if he's alive. And this Cooper, Rabbi Cooper, is trying to tell you about how bad it is in the Soviet Union while Martin Bormann is gaining strength and buying up corporations and merging Nazi gold now into every possible way to take over the world and probably using a good hunk of that money to turn the world Christian. So he just mentioned Billy Graham, what he won't see, and threw in the Korean airline. So because I saw that, it reminded me of sections on the book on Billy Graham that I have, and I just want to share about two or three sentences from this book because they have to do with Ronald Reagan and some of the people we've been talking about and where Graham is coming from or where he came from in terms of the fundamentalist churches. Billy Graham, this is a biography of him, went to Bob Jones College. It was an evangelist that had a school in Cleveland, Tennessee, and his mother sent him there. He said, I didn't have the slightest idea what kind of school it was. All I knew, it was Christian. It was more like evangelical boot camp. So Billy Graham, from there, he went up to Wheaton, Illinois, to a Christian college from Florida up to Wheaton. And if my memory serves me right, Ronald Reagan attended a Christian college in Wheaton for about 123 students, then gave his brother a scholarship there, helped him through college. And Billy Graham was up in Wheaton. A fellow who shared religious training with him, who knew him, came down from Canada, described him as not just about the closest thing to Jesus on earth. His friend described Billy Graham with his blonde hair and his appearance that he's sort of like Christ's American son. This book, very modest, being the son of Christ. And then it goes on to tell that another close associate of his was John Conley, who pronounced him the conscience of America. Billy Graham is the conscience of America. Then in this book, I'm jumping over parts of it, it tells about the Youth for Christ campaigns, and this is where his career began. that they start an organization of Saturday night evangelical extravaganzas. We use every modern means to catch the attention of the unconverted. We punch them right between the eyes with the gospel. We mount it out of a bare little office on Chicago's North Well Street, run by Tory Johnson. These fundamentalist rallies were ostensibly addressed to the new generation that emerged during America's absorption in global struggle. When the war was, Youth for Christ was a phenomena. He goes on to describe how they put on these shows and this movement was going on. And then they got the sponsorship of people such as William Randolph Hearst in a lot of newspapers. And that began his career. He systematically changed his delivery. This is Billy Graham. He followed Walter Winchell and Drew Pearson. He studied in the mirrors. He had poses that he took. He rehearsed his pulpit poses wherever he had a hand or a full-length mirror, and he lugged around a lot of books to pull out and quote at various times. And as he practiced this and carried on his circus, it was time to go to the international set. So by 1946, Hearst had followed him and provided him and Youth with Christ for a trip abroad. Now, Billy Graham came out of the South, the fundamentalist Christian. Randolph Hearst was a Catholic. He was pro-Adolf Hitler, Goering and Goebbels and Hitler. He had them writing for his papers, the Examiner, and his Eastern papers that he owned. And then he put his money not into a Catholic, but into the fundamentalist Christian who could go around traveling. And they put money into the Youth for Christ International. They were accompanied in their first excursion to Europe, not only by a Hearst reporter, but by a Life photographer. And this is Henry Luce, a Knight of Malta, like Clara Luce, was knighted by the Vatican also. But here are Hearst and Luce, two Catholics, sending the Youth for Christ with Billy Graham out on a trip with the cameras and the coverage, the newspapers, Lifetime, Fortune, and Hearst reported. They accompanied these Youth for Christ, and when they departed from the Chicago airport, Billy had his entourage, including his friend Mr. Templeton, kneel with him on the tarmac by the ramp of the plane for a brief prayer meeting, the photographers saying at every amen, keep praying, while they obligingly did, and the wind was flapping the ties in their faces. Doesn't this sound like the Pope posing and taking his trips all over Europe with the backdrop and the cameras blowing? Along this trip, it goes on, Mr. Luce and Mr. Hearst representatives were following Billy as he went up and down the aisles on the plane, and wherever he went, he was photogenic, and he was promoted by those people. Then the book goes on, industriously undertaking to verse himself in the new youth of the 60s, Billy Graham used to sometimes wear dark glasses and put on a mustache and disguise himself and go on the Sunset Strip or camouflage himself at student demonstrations to see what they were doing, the student radicals. And he came to the conclusion, as he's supposed to be objective when he goes to the meetings, you understand, after he's been pushed all over Europe from 1946 into the 60s and back, and with the Luce Empire and Hearst Empire, he comes to the conclusion that student radicals are very dangerous to the security of our nation. You see, the student radicals were anti-war, and the Bible says you have the war, and they're anti-Christ, because they weren't attending church on Sunday. So he had to come down on the student radicals, and under the bare example of wearing dark glasses and a mustache and going there, he realizes that they are truly the danger to this nation. So he has to get to work, and then the book do something about it. And the book says it was a time in the life of the country in the 60s, after the assassination of John Kennedy, when it seemed that some cellar door had suddenly gone open, and berserkness and chaos came out. Remember Richard Nixon's Operation Chaos when he was working with Billy Graham. This chaos came out. The American regulars, like Ronald Reagan and J. Edgar Hoover, could not have been any more uncomprehending of the American mystics like Alan Graham, Norman Mailer, Lyndon Johnson, than they could have understood Leroy Jones or Bob Dylan. Well, I think J. Edgar Hoover and Ronald Reagan understood Lyndon Johnson fairly well. I don't know where they get to the point that Lyndon Johnson, who was in the House of Representatives for years, was such a loony, and even the anti-war movement was against Lyndon Johnson. But he puts on his mustache and realizes, you know, as he sees the crowd, what is happening. And he said, with those rifle cracks in Dallas, in fact, The old schizophrenic conflict in American psyche between the soldiers and discipline and the recurring struggle of the mystery of who we actually are emerged after John Kennedy was killed. Then this book goes on. I remember one evening at the Los Angeles Beverly Hills Hotel. It was in Beverly Hills, where Governor Reagan was speaking. And there he came in, tall, boxy-shouldered, still staunchly handsome. Still staunchly handsome. This guy was going to run for president at the time. Graham thought he was ready to retire as the governor. And in the same party was the Los Angeles County Sheriff leading the Pledge of Allegiance. And they played the Star Spangled Banner and made their pledge. And everyone settled down to their English Channel sole and wine sauce. And listen to music from the Sound of Music, Manny Herman's music, and the theme of Zhivago. And at that moment, this is in the Billy Graham book, at that moment, in the dark hills of Big Sur, this is in California, some 300 miles to the north, where a rock festival is about to begin, another host is gathering as the last ghosts of the days dim away to the rim of the sea. A numberless convocation of spectral youth with long filmy hair coming out of everywhere, out of the mountains, out of the night. At the Beverly Hilton, Reagan takes the lectern and talks in a voice and talks to these people, of course, about the founding fathers. If we've all been lumped together in what they call the establishment, then we better work together, Reagan said, because there are those abroad and in our land working night and day who will alienate our young people. Countlessly, they continue to come filtering out of the mountains as if by some uneven horn of the evening, looking like Che Guevara or Bowery derelicts in the attire of Pawnees. And the author jumps from the Hilton Hotel to Big Sur with the knapsacks, the guitars, the unlit lanterns, and the party of the 70s that Ronald Reagan then describes. He said, "Let us not confuse what is going on. We will lead the way to a renewed commitment to integrity and morality. Our forefathers wove God into the very fabric of government. We must do no less." And the crowd rose to their feet in the hurrahs. Now, this was Ronald Reagan in the 60s. This isn't Ronald Reagan 1984. God was going to save us. These plans of doing the things that they're doing were laid out at the end of World War II. The evangelicals started to be funded in the 50s. They could have an excuse because of the turmoil after Kennedy was killed. John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. And there's so much unrest in this nation. But the reason I share that part from Billy Graham is that he and Ronald Reagan and Sheriff Peter Pitches and J. Edgar Hoover were all working together continuously. And this isn't a new point breaking off from an old tradition. Reagan waited till he had his 4 years in, and when he's sure he would be president for the next four, then he could run with the Christian fundamentalists that he went to college with, and psychologically and in every other way he's been with all along. Now, the Washington Post had a story recently, "The Greatest Story Ever Told." This is August the 18th, 1984, just a week before the Republican convention is to begin. This is not just an ordinary book. It's called The Book. You may be seeing it in your stores if you haven't seen it yet. What the book is a rewriting of the Bible. They've spent $5 million on publicity to make sure you want it. $5 million. And it's published by Tyndale House, T-Y-N-D-A-L-E, of Wheaton, Illinois. Again, where Billy Graham went for his Christian fundamentalist work, where Ronald Reagan came from. Wheaton, Illinois, and I think Bob Woodward, who wrote The Lies about John Belushi from Wheaton, Illinois, and a few other illustrious people. Now, there's a $5 million blitz on this particular book. I saw one on the stand the other day, and it's not the Bible per se. They're making it readable so that you understand it. Now, the endeavor for this was put up by Christian Broadcasting Network of Virginia Beach. CBN, who got the idea, when you open the book, we tell you right off it is the Bible. CBN, it was run by Pat Robertson, the founder of the nonprofit network, in 1960. Now, 1960 is when the Young Americans for Freedom, working with General Walker in Munich, Germany, came. It was formed, Young Americans for Freedom was formed in 1960, that same year, with William Buckley and Robert Morris and Ronald Reagan. In 1962 is when the men came from Munich to see Robert Morris. But 1960 was the year that YAF, with William Buckley and Douglas Caddy, formed Young Americans for Freedom. That's the year that Pat Robertson began his 700 Club in 1960. He was a former roommate at Yale with J. Peter Grace, and William Buckley got his career started from Yale also. And, of course, Ronald Reagan's wife, Nancy, was roommate at Smith College with the sister of William Buckley, which she doesn't discuss very much. You wouldn't know that Nancy went to Smith College, but she was a student there. Pat Robertson, close links, again, always going back here with J. Peter Grace, the Otto Ambrose. I look at the Nazi connections, the German connections, and their links to the various organizations that I keep referring to on this program and repeat the names on purpose, because here comes Pat Robertson with 1960, the money to start the 700 Club on television, and in 1984, or starting in 1982, $5 million are going into the book. Now, the book is going to be sold at all the various markets and book sales around the copy. CBN, that's a Christian Broadcasting Network, is pushing the Bible. They're pushing it harder. Read the Bible, read the Bible, read the book. The idea was conceived by Dr. Kenneth Taylor, founder and chairman of Tyndale House. It's called The Living Bible, is a paraphrase for the Bible. Basically, he wrote a book called The Living Bible, and now the word is to paraphrase, as I say, what is in the Bible so that you understand it. For example, they give examples of how when in the St. James Version, if it gives one translation, they make it readable for you and change the wording. King James says, "Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path." The book will say, "Your words are a flashlight to light up the path ahead of me and keep me from stumbling." That's a translation. The book reads, you know, they have the book, and the King James says, "In the beginning God created the heaven and the earth was out form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep." The book says, "When God began creating the heavens and earth, the earth was shapeless, a chaotic mass, and the Spirit of God was broadening over the dark vapors." Isn't that a horrible thing to take that and rearrange it? Now, the Christian Broadcasting, as I say, has put $5 million. They hired Compton Advertising Company of Madison Avenue. Read the book, read the book. They have five television commercials that they had last September in between some important programs. They're going to use spots through the Academy Awards. They're advertising for the book. You'll see it advertised. And they've selected certain cities around the country to begin. They'll have it at B. Dalton, Walden Books, Safeway, Osco Drugs, Kmart, television commercials, and interrupting various shows. And they expect millions and millions of the book to be sold. The Bible will be translated for the morons so that they can get the story and get the message easy. Then you don't have a chance to misunderstand when they interpret it for you. Now, very close to this whole scene of the people behind all this, the Falwells and the Christian Right and Ronald Reagan, are people such as Paul Laxalt, as I say, who's on the Coalition for Peace Through Strength. Paul Laxalt just sent out letters to members, ministers, telling them to vote for Ronald Reagan, and really paraphrasing it that this is their duty. There's an article called God and Politics in the Washington Post. It goes like this: "The most alarming effort to Christianize America was a week before the GOP convention in Dallas, when Senator Paul Laxalt, chairman of the Reagan-Bush Committee, addressed his letter to Christian ministers and priests. He sent this letter to 45,000 fundamentalist pastors. You may have read it or you may not. Dear Christian leader, as leader under God's authority, we can't afford to resign ourselves to idle neutrality in this election that will confirm or silence the president who has worked so diligently on your behalf and behalf of all Americans," for these Christian fundamentalist pastors. "Ronald Reagan shares an unwavering commitment to the traditional values that you share. Now, you organize a voter registration drive in your church to assure that those in your ministry have a voice in the upcoming election, a voice that will surely help secure the re-election of President Reagan and Vice President Bush. Along with these letters was a flyer Christian Voter Program information enclosed, and there's a picture of Ronald Reagan. It says he's been faithful in his support of your issues and for Christian citizens. The message was to Christians, informing them that they should be sure and register in their churches, the people who are not registered, that the church is dependent upon good policies in Washington with the right president. That's really what he's saying. And that's Paul X. Salt. Now, Lex Salt is an interesting person for several reasons. Number one, he's been mentioned as the closest friend of Robert Keith Gray, who I keep saying I want to do more on this broadcast, the public relations gentleman who really is the off-campus part of the Central Intelligence Agency who can do and get things done through corporations that Casey can't get done by himself. Paul X. Salt, William Casey, the same Casey I mentioned last week with the torturing, the CIA tortures of tearing the flesh off and burning people alive. Lex Salt and Casey and Robert Keith Gray are very close in ways I want to detail one more time for you. But the Howard Hughes Organization had long ago selected first Richard Nixon through the Lincoln Club in 1946 to be President of the United States, along with the arms race and bringing Nazis to the country. Next was to be Ronald Reagan with his fundamentalist Christian background and his contacts through General Electric Theater and Hollywood to carry the election process in Congress. And the next selected president to the Hughes, what they call the Hughes Organization, was to be Paul X. Salt. This has been documented in various papers that belong to the Summa Corporation and in their hands. Now, there's a new book coming out, and there'll be parts of it in Playboy November and December, on the life of Howard Hughes, briefly described in the newspaper last week, the San Jose Mercury, Hughes' bid for power. Author says the recluse paid off politicians in an effort to buy control of the White House. Now, if no Howard Hughes was seen since 1966, who was buying the White House and the Paul Lex Salt? Because the Hughes organization moves into Nevada, where Lex Salt is the governor and now the senator. And this is almost like the missing Bormann and Eva Braun and Hitler story, the missing Howard Hughes and the takeover of it's a mystery of bodies. I think I've solved both of them, and I don't want to make it too confusing for you. In one, they said they were all dead and they were alive. In this case, they took the man, and then when he was died, they had Vance Cooper in his place. But this author claims, he wrote for Wall Street Journal and Washington Post, and I don't trust those sources too much, but he has a lot of documents, and he says that the recluse paid off the politicians. The Hughes organization, of course, did. And describing just a article on the book, it's on Citizen News, published by Holt, Reinhardt, and Winston. Michael Drosnin says, it talks about Richard Nixon and the Democratic Party and how problems of Watergate stemmed from Larry O'Brien from the Democratic Party working for Howard Hughes. And we have similar situation of the Democrats taking over, so-called Democrats taking over the Democratic Party, who actually are linked to the Hughes organization, to the CIA, and now continue on with Robert Keith Gray, such as Frank Mankiewicz, and a lot of top Democrats in his office that really work with the intelligence community. And the Democratic Party will never, ever rise up out of this, I don't think, again. Now, just a couple of things about this article in Paul Lex Salt. To mention it, they called members of the Summa Corporation to say, is it true that that Howard tried to control the political parties? And a person quoted by the name of Perry Lieber said, he can't imagine why a recluse was trying to buy his way into the White House. Well, Howard, first of all, if Howard wasn't seen or visible, it was his controllers that were buying their way into the White House. It has nothing to do with Howard. There was no Howard. In Nevada, when that body moved in that train in the dark of night, Paul Lex Salt never saw any Howard Hughes. Chester Davis, the attorney for the Hughes Corporation, never saw Howard Hughes. Robert Mayhew never saw Hughes. Lex Salt, Mayhew, and Davis, or any of the top people in Nevada from 1966 on, never saw him after John Roselli and Mayhew delivered to him in a hospital in Boston for brain surgery. Howard was never. Because Paul Lex Salt is the recipient or heir of possibility of becoming the President of the United States, And because he is lining up with contacting 45,000 fundamentalist Christians associated with Jerry Falwell and a limited nuclear war in the Defense Department, we have to take another look at Falwell and Laxalt and William Casey with his murderous teams in Central America. I'll do some of that and some more articles on the Christian fundamentalists. We'll take a one-minute break and side two continue with articles of Falwell and the Christians and what they're doing and saying at the present time.